Put Out More Flags by Evelyn Waugh. Dramatized in three parts by Dennis Hawthorne. With Simon Cadell as Basil Seal and Tony Britton as the narrator. Part 1. Autumn.
In the week which had preceded the outbreak of the Second World War, days of surmise and apprehension, which cannot without irony be called the last days of peace, and on the Sunday morning, when all doubts were finally resolved and misconceptions corrected, three rich women thought first, and mainly, of Basil Seal. They were his sister, his mother, and his mistress. His sister, Barbara Sothill, was in her home, Malfrey, a beautiful 18th-century house set in the rich countryside of the Cotswolds. Standing close to her husband, Freddie, she listened to the Prime Minister's speech.
I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
Well, that's that then.
Yes, I suppose it is.
War.
That reminds me, Freddie. Your pistol has been found. One of the maids came across it when she was cleaning out the toy cupboard. She thought it was one of the children's toys.
God almighty, the toy cupboard? I could have been court-martialed for losing it, you know.
Well, no, you won't be, will you?
No sign of the binoculars, I suppose.
Not yet. I have an idea I may have lent them to the scoutmaster.
The scoutmaster?
To look at something. I'll drive over after lunch and see if he has them.
No driving, I'm afraid. No petrol for gadding about.
Oh, no, I suppose not.
This could be my last day in Malfrey for some time. I have to report to the yeomanry first thing tomorrow.
Yes, darling.
Let's go for a walk in the park before lunch.
Yes, why not?
Malfrey looks at his best in the autumn. Worth fighting for, wouldn't you say?
You won't be going away. Not really away, I mean, for some time, will you?
Good Lord, no. It'll take us quite a while to come to terms with modern warfare. You can't go from horses to tanks just like that. No, I imagine I'll be able to spend a fair bit of time back here. I certainly mean to shoot the pheasants. Let's walk down to the lake.
To the boathouse?
Yes, why not?
Freddie?
Yes?
While the Prime Minister was talking, I couldn't help thinking about Basil.
Oh, couldn't you?
I believe it's what he's been waiting for all these years.
Oh, well, I suppose in a way we all have, really.
Basil's needed a war. He's not meant for peace.
Yeah, that's true enough. The wonder is he's kept out of prison. If he'd been born in a different class, he wouldn't have.
He's always been mixed up in fighting.
If you call living in a gin palace in La Paz and seeing generals shoot one another...
And Spain?
Journalist and gunrunner.
He's always been a soldier monkey.
Well, he hasn't done much about it. While he's been gadding about, the rest of us have been training as territorials and yeomanry.
Darling, that lot of training you've done.
If there'd been more like us and fewer like Basil, there'd never have been a war. You can't blame Ribbentrop for thinking it's decadent when he's all people like Basil about. Yeah, I don't suppose I'll have much use for him in the army. Well, he's 36. He might get some sort of job connected with censorship. He seems to know a lot of languages.
You wait. Basil will be covered with medals while your silly old yeomanry are still messing about on manoeuvres and waiting for your tanks.
Barbara, this may be my last afternoon at Malfrey for some time, and I don't want to spend it talking about your brother.
Well, you wait and see.
You can see the whole of the house reflected in the lake. Marvellous. Shall we go inside? There's such a good view from the boathouse.
Yes, why not?
What are you smiling at?
Dear Freddie, you're very sweet.
Am I?
You always get amorous in the boathouse.
Do I?
Let's go and look at the view.
Freddie did become amorous. And all the time, Barbara thought of Basil. She thought of him in terms of the war books she had read. She saw him as Siegfried Sassoon, an infantry subaltern in a mud-bogged trench, standing to at dawn, his eyes on his wristwatch, waiting for 0 hour. She saw him as Compton Mackenzie, spider in a web of Balkan intrigue, undermining a monarchy among olive trees and sculptured marble. She saw him as T.E. Lawrence, and Rupert Brooke.
I suppose we'd better go back.
Hmm? Oh, yes. I suppose we had.
I'm glad we came here.
So am I, darling.
I've been thinking...
What about?
About the season shooting. I won't ask any of the regiment over for the early shoots, but I don't see why we shouldn't let some of them have a bang at the cocks round about Christmas.
Basil's mother heard the Prime Minister's broadcast at her home in London. Lady Seal had taken fewer precautions against air raids than most of her friends. Her most valuable possession, a small carpaccio, had been sent for safekeeping at Moffrey. The miniatures and Limoges enamels were at the bank. The Sèvres was packed in crates and put below stairs. Otherwise, there was no change in her drawing room. The windows were open on the balcony, and she sat gazing out across the square. Her butler approached from the end of the room.
Shall I remove the wireless, my lady?
Yes, by all means. He spoke very well. Very well indeed.
It's all very sad, my lady.
Very sad for the Germans, Anderson.
Oh, that is the warning, my lady.
Yes, Anderson, I hear it.
Will you be coming downstairs?
No, not yet at any rate. Get all the servants down and see that they're quiet.
Will you require your respirator, my lady?
I don't suppose so. From what Sir Joseph Mannering tells me, the danger of gas is very slight. In any case, I dare say this is only a practice. Leave it on the table.
Will that be all, m'lady?
That's all. See that the maids don't get nervous.
M'lady.
Oh, and Anderson, Sir Joseph is coming to lunch. In view of the alert, he may be late. Mention it to cook.
Very good, m'lady.
The normal silence and emptiness of Sunday in Belgravia was made complete that morning by the air raid scare. Lady Seal thought of Basil and the war. The last war had cost her little, nothing indeed except a considerable holding of foreign investments. Now she had a son to offer her country, Basil, her wayward and graceless and grossly disappointing Basil, whose unaccountable taste for low company had led him into so many vexatious scrapes in the last 10 years. Basil, his peculiarities merged in the manhood of England, at last was entering on his inheritance. The sirens sounded the all clear, and a few moments later, Sir Joseph arrived for lunch.
This will be a different war from the last one, an economic war of attrition, that is how I see it. I had a most interesting talk yesterday with Eddie Best Bingham at the Beefsteak. We've got a most valuable invention called RDF. That'll keep the bombers out of London.
Dear Joe, you always know the most encouraging things. What is RDF?
I'm not absolutely clear about that. It's very secret.
Oh.
You know I'm the last man to prophesy rashly, but I think we can take one thing as axiomatic. There will be no air attack on London. The Germans will never attempt the Maginot Line. The French will hold on forever, if needs be, and the German air bases are too far away for them to be able to attack us. If they do, we'll RDF them out of the skies.
You're such a comfort, Joe. Do help yourself to sherry.
Thank you, my dear.
I want to talk to you about Basil.
Ah, yes. Basil.
You've so often been helpful in the past.
Oh, I've tried. Plenty of good in the boy, I'm sure.
I feel so much happier about him since this morning. Sometimes lately I've begun to doubt whether we shall ever find the proper place for Basil. He's been a square peg in so many round holes. But this war seems to take the responsibility off our hands. There's room for everyone in wartime, or every man. It's always been Basil's individuality that's been wrong. You've often said that, Joe. In wartime, individuality doesn't matter anymore. There are just men, aren't there?
Yes. Basil's individuality has always been rather strong, you know, and he must be 35 or 36 now. That's rather old for starting as a soldier.
Nonsense, Joe. Men of 45 and 50 enlisted in the ranks in the last war and died as gallantly as anyone else. I want you to see lieutenant colonels of the Foot Guard regiments and see where he will fit in best.
Well...
You will do this for me.
Of course, Cynthia, of course. I can't promise anything, but I will make inquiries.
Luncheon is served, lady.
Oh, thank you, Anderson. Come along, Joe.
Do you know where Basil is at the moment?
I thought he was with Angela in Cannes, but Margot Maitreland saw him at a surrealist show last week, so it seems he's still in London. If he is, I shall find him.
Basil Seal's mistress, Mrs. Angela Lyne, was returning by train from the south of France. Her villa at Cannes was shut now, and she felt that perhaps she would never go back to it. This year she remembered it only as the place where she had waited in vain for Basil. He had telegraphed, "International situation forbids joyriding." She had sent him the money for the journey, but there had been no answer. What would become of Basil in this war? Would he go into the army? He would have to have his hair cut, lose his individuality, become like other men.
Where are we now, Granger?
I do not know, madam. We haven't reached Lyon yet, that I know.
No one has any idea as to what time we may reach Paris?
No, madam. So far we are 8 hours late.
I see. Perhaps I should eat something. A sandwich, some fruit. See what you can get from the restaurant car.
Very good, madam.
Angela Lyne was beautiful, and she wore the livery of the highest fashion, but as one who dressed to inform rather than to attract. Her face was mute. It might have been carved in jade, it was so smooth and cool and conventionally removed from the human. In the way of feelings, it betrayed nothing.
I am sorry, madam. They removed the restaurant car at Avignon. There is no service.
I see.
The conductor says he doesn't think the sleeping cars will go any further than Dijon. We shall have to change into day coaches.
Will we?
Well, isn't it wicked, madam, when we've paid?
Well, we're at war now. I expect there will be a lot to put up with. Make up my bed, Granger. I shall take a pill and sleep until we reach Dijon, or until I wake up, whichever comes first.
Very good, madam. Will Mr. Seal be in the army?
I shouldn't be surprised.
He will look a lot different, won't he?
Very different.
The train gathered speed, and Angela thought of the war and the changes that war must bring. One single unifying thought recurred in Angela's mind. Death. Death for Basil. That was what the onset of war meant for her. But no one seeing the calm and pensive mask of her face could ever possibly have guessed. Rupert Brooke, Old Bill, the unknown soldier. Thus, three fond women saw him. But Basil, lying in bed in Poppet Green's studio, fell short and wide of all these ideals. He was not at his best that morning, both by reason of his heavy drinking with Poppet's friends the night before, and the loss of face he was now suffering with Poppet in his attempts to explain his assertion that there would be no war. This statement he had made repeatedly in a Charlotte Street restaurant, not as a speculation, but as a fact, known only to himself and half a dozen leading Germans.
The Prussian military clique are allowing the Nazis to gamble just as long as their bluff is not called, and I have this direct from von Fritsch. The army broke the Nazi party in the July purge of 1936. They let Hitler and Goering and Goebbels and Ribbentrop remain as puppets just as long as they are valuable. The army, like all armies, is intensely pacifist. As soon as it becomes clear that Hitler is heading for war, he will be shot.
Because Poppet's friends were unused to people who claimed acquaintance with the great, Poppet had basked in vicarious esteem. Basil was little used to being heard with respect, and now was correspondingly resentful at being reproached with his own words.
Well, and when did the army step in and shoot Hitler? There will be no war. Well, now there is a war, Basil. They'll destroy London. What shall I do? Where can I go? It's the end of my painting. Have a good mind to follow Parsnip and Pimpernel and go to New York.
Well, you'll be in more danger crossing the Atlantic than staying in London. There won't be any air raids in London.
Oh, for God's sake, don't say that. Oh, God, you've done it. They've come.
Faultless timing. It's always been Hitler's strong point.
For God's sake, Basil, it's an air raid. We must take cover. Well, aren't you going to get up? Aren't you going to get dressed?
It's Sunday morning, Poppet.
You said there wouldn't be a war. You said the bombers would never come. Now we shall all get killed and you just lie there.
I should have thought an air raid was just the thing for a surrealist like you. Or to give you plenty of tricky compositions, you know. Limbs and things lying about in odd places.
Oh, I wish I'd never met you. I wish I'd been to church. I was brought up in a convent. I wanted to be a nun once. I wish I was a nun. God, where's my gas mask? I shall go mad if I don't find my gas mask.
Oh, do make up your mind what you're frightened of, Poppet. If you're going to be bombed with high explosive, run down to the shelter. If you're going to be gassed, shut the skylight and stay up here in bed with me. In any case, I shouldn't bother with that respirator. If they use anything, it'll be arsenical smoke, and it's no use against that. You'll find arsenical smoke quite painless at first. You won't know you've been gassed for a couple of days, and then it'll be too late. In fact, you know, for all we know, we're being gassed at this moment. If they fly high enough and let the wind carry the stuff, they may be 20 miles away. The symptoms, when they do appear, are rather revolting.
God, you're horrible! You're unspeakable! You're...
Oh, dear, what a silly little thing she is. Well, I might as well get up now, I suppose. No point in being in bed by myself. Anyway... time for a drink. I'll call on Alistair and Sonia. Black velvet on a Sunday morning. Just the thing.
Hey, you! Yeah, it's you I'm talking to. Take cover!
You haven't been doing this long, have you, Warden?
Never mind that. You're supposed to take cover.
I've only one thing to say to you. MI-13.
Eh?
MI-13.
I don't quite twig.
Ah, but you ought to twig. Surely you realise that members of MI-13 are free to go anywhere and at all time.
Oh, sorry, I'm sure. You're quite right. I was only took on yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Bit of a lark getting a raid second time on. Oh, there goes the all clear. I'm almost sorry it's over.
Cheer up. You may be breathing arsenical smoke at this moment. Watch your urine in a couple of days' time.
It's truth. I say, what did you say you was?
MI-13.
Is that to do with gas?
Well, it's to do with everything. Good morning.
Wouldn't we smell it or nothing?
No.
Or cough or anything?
No.
And you think they've dropped it just in that minute and gone away leaving us all for dead?
My dear fellow, I don't know. It's your job as warden to find out.
Struth.
That'll teach him to shout at me in the street.
While Basil made his way through the still empty streets, Lady Margot Metroland and her son, Lord Peter Passmaster, wearing the uniform of a cavalry officer, considered the implications of the Prime Minister's speech.
It occurs to me, Peter, that if this war really gets going, and I'm told that it won't, not like the last one when it was such fun, it occurs to me that maybe I should close the house.
What would you do?
I'll move into the Ritz. Would you mind?
No, not at all. I imagine I'm going to be rather busy now. The adjutant says we're in a state of perpetual readiness.
Oh, my dear, how exciting.
Lady Metroland?
Oh, yes, Belmont.
The staff are waiting downstairs.
And they would like me to reassure them, and I shall.
Thank you, my lady. And Lord Passmaster?
Yes, Beaumont?
We would all appreciate it if you would say a few words.
Oh, of course.
Thank you, Beaumont.
My lady?
I knew the news would come today. I kept it free. Now, what are your plans?
I thought I'd look in on Alistair and Sonia.
Oh, how nice. Do give them my love. There'll be some kind of lunch here later on, if you're interested.
I'll see what they say.
Oh, and ask them if they know where Basil is. His mother's looking for him. Well, we'd better go down. Oh, give me your arm. I feel very proud. Such a handsome son. And such a, oh, pretty uniform.
Basil, darling, how lovely. Peter Passmaster's just arrived, looking too ravishing in his uniform. He's helping Alistair with the drinks.
Peter's in the army already?
Of course. Where's your horrible girlfriend?
Poppet. She took fright.
She was a beast, darling, one of your very worst. Oh, there you are, Peter. Doesn't he look wonderful?
Hello, Basil.
The cavalry, I see.
Well, I served with them briefly years ago. I'd almost forgotten. Shall I put the glasses down here?
Of course. Won't it be too ridiculous for you, Peter, starting all over again, lunching with young men on guard?
Well, not young, Sonia. You should see us. The average age of the subalterns is about 40. The colonel finished the last war as a brigadier, and our troopers are either weather-beaten old commissionaires or 15 stone valets.
Hello, Basil. How's the art tart?
Fled at the sound of battle.
Can't say I'm sorry. Is Angela still in France, then?
I expect so.
Blackers for everyone, I take it?
Oh, well,
good.
Tell us about the war.
Well, as I see it, the German...
No, darling, I don't mean that. Not all. Not about who's going to win or why we are fighting. Tell us what everyone's going to do about it. Alistair wants to go for a soldier.
Yeah, I think I ought to, don't you?
Conscription has rather taken the guilt off that particular gingerbread. Besides, this isn't going to be a soldier's war.
Poor Peter, it isn't going to be your war, sweetheart.
No, it suits me. Oh, Basil, I nearly forgot. Now, my mother says your mother is looking for you.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
I expect Basil will have the most tremendous adventures. He always did it in peacetime. Goodness knows what he'll do in the war.
Oh, there are too many people in on the racket.
I don't believe any of you are nearly as excited about it as I am. From what Margot says, the last war was absolute heaven. Alistair, do hurry with the drinks. We're all parched.
How is Margot?
Oh, she's fine.
She's asked us all round for lunch. I've been trying to phone her, but some odious man cut me off and said that only official calls were being taken this morning.
Basil.
Thanks. Try again, Sonia. Say you're MI-13.
What's that?
Never mind, Sonia. Just do it.
How masterful. All right.
Peter?
This is an official call. I'm MI-13.
Oh, I have. But technically, we still carry swords.
Basil, it's worked. Hello, Margot. Hello, darling. How are you? We'd love to come round. Basil is with us. Will that be all right? Well, yes, he did. What's that? Yes, I told you. What am I, Basil?
MI-13.
I am MI-13, and this is a priority call to Lady Metroland. There's a ridiculous woman on the line saying this is a private call. Oh, good, Margot, there you are. We'll all come round to you, then. That'll be heaven. Peter looks quite ravishing. Hello? Hello? I do believe that woman has cut us off. Anyway, it's all settled.
Good.
Peter,
mm-hmm.
If we go past Buckingham Palace, will the sentries salute you?
Oh, I should think so, yes.
We'll go there at once. It's on the way. I can't wait to see them. I'll get dressed. Come and talk to me, Peter. Darling, did you know Emma's been seen in
the most frightful... Won't you try to get into the army?
They're not looking for volunteers in this war, Alistair. Hmm? They just call people up when they want them.
So what will you do then?
I don't know yet. I know what I want.
What's that?
I want to be one of those people one heard about in 1919. The hard-faced men who did well out of the war.
Later that day, the first day of the war, many groups gathered together throughout London. Groups that were excited and frightened. One such gathering came together in Poppet Green's studio.
But seriously, being absolutely honest, were you frightened when you heard the siren? That's what's really important, I feel. How one reacts to the threat.
I wasn't in the least frightened. I was so surprised at my own courage that I felt quite giddy.
I wasn't frightened. I just felt glum.
I was frightened.
Dear Poppet, you always have the healthiest reactions. Erkman really did wonders for you.
Well, I'm not so sure they were so healthy this time, Ambrose. Do you know I actually found myself praying?
Oh, hey, didn't you? That's bad.
Better see Erkman again.
Unless he's in a concentration camp.
We shall all be in concentration camps.
If anyone so much as mentions concentration camps again, I shall go haywire. I am going to look at Poppet's pictures and forget the war.
Oh, yes, please do, Ambrose. I'd like to have your opinion.
Rather an extreme reaction, wasn't it?
Well, it's understandable, really. When Ambrose was in Munich last year, he fell in love with a brown shirt.
Yeah.
Hans, his name was.
Really?
The problem was that the authorities found out that Ambrose was half-Jewish.
Really?
So Hans was shut away, and Ambrose had to get out quickly.
Ambrose? Was that Ambrose Silk?
Yes, didn't you know?
No, we've never met. I've read him, of course. Very good stuff of its kind.
What kind is that?
Well, It's beautifully written, of course, but somehow it always strikes me as being rather passé. Very fin de siècle, you know what I mean? A certain whiff of the yellow book.
Oh, he's always been quite frank about that, of course. I remember once when Parsnip and Pimpernel were arguing with him about proletarian art, the people's total war. You know the line.
Yes, yes, of course.
I can't come with you all the way, Ambrose said. I respect your views, but I can't come with you all the way. I belong hopelessly to the age of the ivory tower.
By the way, is there any truth in the rumour that Parsnip and Pimpernel have gone to America?
Oh, no rumour, it's a fact. They left last Wednesday.
What, both of them?
Mm. Well, they do everything together, of course.
Wow. So much for the people's total war, then. Yeah. So much for proletarian solidarity.
Bravo, Poppet. This head is good, really good. What is it?
Aphrodite of Melos. I'm working on it. Oh, my God.
What is it?
A moustache. Mm. That awful ginger moustache.
An inspired touch. The great, empty face of Aphrodite, as bland as butter. And the bull's eyes, barley sugar in the background. Conventional enough. But that cheeky moustache.
Hello, Ambrose. How nice to see you.
Geoffrey! Que faites-vous dans cette galère? I was just telling Poppet how good this is. Don't you agree?
Yes. The moustache makes it a really original touch.
Exactly. It shows you have crossed one of the artistic Rubicons, Poppet, and feel strong enough to be facetious. Like those wonderful dramatic old chestnuts in Parsnip's Guernica Revisited.
I see what you mean.
You're growing up, Poppet, my dear.
I did not paint that moustache.
What did you say?
I did not paint that moustache.
Indeed.
It must have been Basil. It was Basil this morning before he left, during the alert. Oh, what a beast he is. Oh, I never want to see him again.
Who is Basil?
Basil Seal.
Oh, that Basil. Mm. I didn't know he was a painter.
He isn't. Oh, seriously, Geoffrey, what are you doing here? It's hardly your milieu.
I came with George Scrimmage. Oh. He wants us to publish a book on English surrealists.
Will you?
Probably not. It hardly seems the time. Is she any good, Miss Green?
Poppet? No, not really. Totally predictable. You can positively hear her imagination creaking like a pair of old corsets, my dear, on a harridan. That's why I was so surprised by the moustache.
I think I'm going to slip away now. Why not come with me? Have some dinner.
Yes, I like that.
Basil Seal. I thought he was attached to Mrs. Lyne, Angela Lyne.
So he is, insofar as Basil is attached to anyone. Do you know her?
No, we've never met. I know her husband, the architect.
Cedric.
Yes. Mm. There was talk of our doing a book on Baroque architecture. He's an authority.
The authority?
Mrs. Lyne is very rich, is she not?
Beyond the dreams of avarice, my dear.
And very beautiful.
Yes, in a kind of glacial way. How she came to marry Cedric, who is the complete aesthete, is one of life's mysteries. They have a son, but no marriage, if you follow me.
I've heard about Seal, but we've never met.
He is the most absolute scoundrel. I adore him. I've known him forever. Well, since Oxford, at any rate. Angela is absolutely besotted with him. They've been together for about, 7 years. She is down in the south of France now, has the most divine villa in Cannes. Basil's supposed to be there. She sent him the fare. He never has a penny, but he has spent it all on Poppet. Too predictable.
You know everyone, don't you, Ambrose?
Everyone that matters.
Yes. Café Royal?
Yum, yum, yes.
The end of September produced an atmosphere of anticlimax. The air raid scare seemed to be over for the time, and those who had voluntarily fled from London were beginning to return, pretending that they had only been to the country to see that everything was all right there. The women and children of the poor, too, were flocking home to their evacuated streets. The blackout persisted. Air raid wardens roamed the remote hamlets of the kingdom, persecuting yokels who walked home from the inn with glowing pipes. Londoners, who were slow to acquire the habit of the domestic hearth, groped their way in darkness from one place of amusement to another, learning their destination by feeling the buttons on the commissionaire's uniforms. The casualty list of street accidents became formidable. and there were terrifying tales of footpads who leaped on the shoulders of old gentlemen on the very steps of their clubs, or beat them to jelly on Hay Hill. Sir Joseph Mannering, mindful of his promise, invited Basil to lunch and introduced him to a lieutenant colonel in the Bombardiers. He reported to Lady Seal.
Is everything arranged, then?
Nothing is exactly arranged yet, Cynthia. I have merely set the ball rolling.
I hope Basil made a good impression.
I hope so, too. I'm afraid he said some rather unfortunate things.
Oh, dear.
As I waited for Basil, he was late, of course, I cast my mind back over the years, Cynthia. This is a time for reflection. May I...
Of course. Please help yourself.
When Christopher died, Cynthia, he disinherited Basil. Oh. There's no other word for it. Barbara had a substantial settlement, but Basil was cut off. In fact, Christopher left him to you to take care of.
Christopher felt that Basil would, in time...
Christopher was not a man whose actions were based on feelings. 20 years as a government chief whip cured him of any such weakness. He was my oldest friend. In life, as in politics, I knew him. He based his judgments on a clear assessment of the facts before him. The fact about Basil was that he was going to be troublesome and untrustworthy, and that to leave him any money would be unwise.
Christopher did not understand
Basil. He understood him only too well. You came to me for advice, and I advised you.
Dear Jim.
Make him an allowance, I said. £400 a year. Give the boy his bread and butter, I said, and let him find the jam by his own exertions.
He has exerted himself, Joe. He has had many jobs.
Exactly. Many jobs. He's never had any difficulty in securing jobs. His trouble has been in keeping them.
He is strongly individual, Joe. When he worked for the Daily Beast, when he worked for the BBC, he was ahead of his time.
That's as may be, Cynthia. You refer to two of his more respectable exploits. But I must remind you that 4 times in the last 10 years, you have had to pay his debts. Once on condition of his living at home with you, once on condition of his living somewhere, anywhere, abroad, once on condition of his marrying, and once on condition of his refraining from marriage. I will not go into the matter of the stolen emeralds. In each of these crises, I have been pleased to come to your aid.
Dear Joe.
But on this occasion, Cynthia, things are different. The nation is at war. This is no time for square pegs in round holes.
But that is my point. War is what Basil needs. The Bombardiers. I'm told he could not do better.
No, that is so. In one way, he could not do better. But he did not make a good impression. His manner was aggressive, and his appearance was, well, unacceptable. The lieutenant colonel was quite taken aback. I could see that. I mentioned that Basil had been a conservative candidate in the West Country. The lieutenant colonel looked at him and said, some pretty funny people have been calling themselves conservatives in the last year or two. It's up to Basil now, Cynthia. I have introduced him. He must follow it up himself if he really wants to get into that regiment.
He shall follow it up.
Who was that on the phone?
Your mother.
Apropos de quoi?
About tidying you up, darling. Apparently your manner is aggressive and your appearance is unacceptable.
She'd been talking to that old snake, Joe Mannering.
She has. I said that your manner was incurable, but that I would try to do something about your appearance.
A new suit, perhaps. It's time I had some decent clothes, Angela.
And a haircut. The haircut first.
You are so practical.
And then you are to go and see some lieutenant colonel in the Bombardiers.
To be honest, Seal, I didn't recognise you when you came in just now. However, in answer to your inquiry, for a fellow of your age to get into the army, the thing to do is to join the supplementary reserve. Put down the regiment you want to join. There are a number of line regiments who do very useful work in their way. And get the commanding officer to apply for you.
Exactly, sir. That's what I came to see you about. I was hoping that you, as commander...
That I?
Well, I've always felt, sir, that if I had to join the Foot Guards, I'd soonest join yours. You're sort of stuffy as the Grenadiers, and you haven't got any of those bogus regional connections like the Scots and Irish and Welsh. So what I suggest is that I sign up for this supplementary reserve. Now, is that right? Yes. And I put you down as my choice of regiment. Will that be okay, sir?
That will not be okay. We do not take our officers from the supplementary reserve.
Well, How do I join you?
I have no vacancy for you in the regiment, Seal. I am looking for platoon commanders. Can you imagine yourself leading a platoon in action?
Well, as a matter of fact, I can, but that's the last thing I want. In fact, that's why I want to keep away from line regiments. After all, there's always a number of interesting staff jobs going for anyone in the guard, isn't there? What I thought of doing was to sign up with you and then look round for something more interesting. I should be frightfully bored with regimental life, you know, but everyone tells me it's a great help to start in a decent regiment. Well, that is so, isn't it?
How did it go, darling?
Not well. Not well at all.
Oh, dear. And you look so particularly presentable.
Yes, can't have been that. I was tremendously polite, said all the right things.
What are you going to do, then?
Well, I've always said this isn't going to be a soldier's war. Espionage. Propaganda. It's ideas that will count. I've got lots of ideas, always have had. Time for a drink, I fancy.
Ambrose Silk had been lunching in Charlotte Street with Poppet Green and her friends. There had been much talk of Parsnip and Pimpernel, much talk of the class war, and how, since Russia had declared herself neutral, the present conflict was merely a phase in capitalist disintegration. Ambrose suddenly felt himself adrift. What was he doing with these people? What was he doing with his life? He hurried away with his absurd light step and a heavy heart. At the corner of Googe Street and the Tottenham Court Road, two soldiers came out of a public house called the Valiant Trooper and made rude noises at Ambrose as he passed.
I shall tell your Sergeant Major of you. Oh, just see if I don't. Valiant Troopers, indeed.
He walked on, without any particular object except to take the air. It was not until he was under its shadow and saw the vast bulk of London University insulting the autumnal sky that he remembered that here was the Ministry of Information and that his publisher, Geoffrey Bentley, was working there at the head of some newly formed department. Ambrose decided to pay him a call.
Oh, my dear, what a peculiar office.
It was once a chemical laboratory, and hence the sink and the dripping tap. Do sit down. The chairs are folding chairs. Indeed, the table is a folding table, but they suffice.
Too austere.
Well, we have to rough it, you see. I had these two busts brought over from my office in Bedford Square to make the place look more human. Do you remember them?
Oh, yes, indeed I do. They are by Nollikens. George III and Mrs. Siddons, is it not?
Yes. Do you like them?
I like them very much, but I can't say that I feel they add a great deal to the humanity of the room. Do you not think, dear Geoffrey, that here, in what was a chemical laboratory, don't you think they are just a weeny bit macabre?
Yes, yes, I know what you mean. They don't really belong. They're really here to annoy the civil servants.
Do they?
To a frenzy. Look at this memo.
Furniture supplementary to official requirements. Undesirability of.
I sent back this. It's a matter of style, manner, if you like.
In reply to yours, art, objet vu, conducive to spiritual repose. Absence of in the quarters of advisory staff.
Today I got this. Flowers, framed photographs and other minor ornaments. Massive marble and mahogany. Decorative features of distinction between. Quite alliterative with rage, you see. For the moment, the matter rests. But as you see, it's uphill work to get anything done.
I suppose it'd make no difference if you explained that Nollikens had inspired the greatest biography in the English language.
None, I should think.
Oh, what terrible people you work with. You are brave, Geoffrey. I couldn't do it.
But bless my soul, Ambrose. Isn't that what you came about?
No, I came to see you.
Yes, everyone comes to see me, but they all come hoping to be taken on in the ministry. You'd better join now that you're here.
No. No.
You might do worse, you know. We all abuse the old M of I, but there are a number of quite human people here already, and we're gradually pushing more in every day. You might do much worse.
I don't want to do anything. I think this whole war's crazy.
You might write a book for us, then. I'm getting out a very nice little series on what we are fighting for.
Oh.
I've signed up a retired admiral, a Church of England curate, an unemployed docker, a Negro solicitor from the Gold Coast, and a nose and throat specialist from Harley Street. We could fit you in very nicely. I used to think war was crazy. It's a new line.
But I do think war crazy still.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Beg your pardon. I didn't expect to find you working, Bentley.
This is Ambrose Silk. I expect you know his work.
No?
No. He's considering doing a book in a Why We're at War series. This is Sir Philip Hesketh Smithers, our departmental assistant director.
How do you do?
If you'll excuse me a minute. Bentley, I came about a memorandum. RQ-108-2-B4. The director is very worried.
Was that document's confidential destruction by fire of?
No. Marble decorative features.
Massive marble and mahogany?
Yeah. Mahogany has no application to your sub-department. That has reference to a prie-dieu in the religious department. The Church of England advisor has been hearing confessions there, and the director is very concerned. No. It's these effigies.
You refer to my Nollikinses?
These great statues. They won't do, Bentley, you know. They really won't do.
Won't do for what?
They won't do for the departmental director. He says, very properly, the portraits of sentimental associations.
These are full of the tenderest associations.
Of relatives.
These are family portraits.
Really, Bentley? Surely that is George the Third.
A distant kinsman on my mother's side.
And Mrs. Siddons.
A slightly closer kinswoman on my father's side.
Oh, I didn't realise. I'll explain that to the director. But I'm sure that such a contingency was definitely excluded from the director's mind.
Flummoxed. Completely flummoxed. I'm glad you were here, Ambrose, to witness my little encounter. But you see what we have to contend with. And now, to your affairs. I wonder where we can fit you into our little household.
I don't want to be fitted.
You'd be a great asset. Perhaps the religious department.
Oh.
I don't think atheism is properly represented there.
Could you tell me, please, how you are related to George the Third? Forgive my asking, but the director is bound to want to know.
The Duke of Clarence's natural daughter, Henrietta, married Jervis Wilbraham of Acton. At that time, I need not remind you, a rural district. His daughter, Gertrude, married my maternal grandfather, who was, not that it matters, 3 times mayor of Chippenham, a man of substantial fortune. All, alas, now dissipated.
I see. Thank you.
Flummoxed again, wouldn't you say?
Was that true?
That my grandfather was mayor of Chippenham? Profoundly true.
About Henrietta?
It has always been believed in the family. Hello? Speaking. Oh, yes, Pauline, what can I do for you? No, I'm not at all interested in Liberia, nor am I interested in anyone who is. Send him to the Near East, they'll sort him out. What did you say his name was? How odd. No, I don't, but I know of him. Goodbye. Your friend Seal has apparently penetrated the building.
Basil? Is he working here?
Not that I know of, not yet. He's trying to interest people in the annexation of Liberia, of all places. Now, Ambrose, this book you're going to write for us...
The German planters there outnumber the British by about 14 to 1. They're organised as a Nazi unit, and I have this direct from von Fritsch. They're simply waiting for the signal from Berlin to take over the government of the state. With Monrovia in enemy hands, with submarines based there, our west coast trade route is cut. Then all the Germans have to do is to shut the Suez Canal. Liberia is our one weak spot in West Africa. We've got to get in first, don't you see?
Yes. Yes. I don't know why you came to me about it. You ought to see Mr. Pauling.
Mr. Pauling sent me to you.
Did he? I wonder why. I'll ask him. Near East here. Get me Mr. Pauling, please.
Ah, Pauling here.
Ah, Pauling. I have a man called Seal here. He says you sent him.
Yes.
Why?
Well, you sent me that frightful Turk this morning.
He was child's play to this.
Then let it be a lesson to you not to send me any more Turks.
You wait and see what I send you. Pauling made a mistake. It is a most interesting scheme, and I wish I could do more for you. I tell you who I think would like to hear about it, Digby Smith. He handles propaganda and subversive activities in enemy territories, and as you say, Liberia is to all intents and purposes enemy territory. I'll get a messenger to show you the way. Will you send a messenger to Near East, please?
I am the Archimandrot Antonios. I am coming in, please.
Oh, yes. Your beatitude, do come in.
I have been telling how I was expelled from Sofia. They said how I must be telling you.
You have been to our religious department?
I have been telling your office clergyman about my expulsing. The Bulgar peoples say it was for fornications, but it was for politics. They are not expulsing from Sofia for fornications unless there is politics too. So, now I am the ally of the British peoples, since the Bulgar peoples say it was for fornications.
Yes, yes, I quite understand. But that is not really the business of this department.
You are not dealing with the business of the Bulgar peoples?
Yes, that is true. But I think that your case opens up a much wider issue than I am empowered to deal with. You must go and see Mr. Pauling. He deals especially with cases like yours.
So, you have here a department of fornications?
Yes, you might call it that.
I find that good. In Sofia is not having any such department.
Come in.
You asked for a messenger, sir.
Ah, yes, good. Now, will you take these gentlemen, both of them, the Archimandrite here, to Mr. Pauling, and Mr. Seal to Mr. Digby Smith? Good day to you, your beatitude. Good day to you, Seal.
Well, then, which of you gentlemen should I deliver first? Mr. Pauling's office...
Well, I suggest that you devote your undivided attention to his beatitude. Just point me in the direction of Mr. Digby's office and I'll fend for myself.
Oh, well, sir, I'm not sure that...
Don't worry. MI-13.
Yes, sir.
As you know, MI-13 go anywhere.
Oh, yes, sir. Of course, sir.
Digby Smith's office?
It's down that way, sir. Left, then left again.
Good. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Well, come along, your sir. Follow me.
To the Department of Fornications. Good, good.
Not a bad idea, really. Fornication on a departmental basis.
Pardon me, sir, but can you put me right for the Near East?
Well, yes. Yes, I can. There, that door there. But you won't get much sense out of him.
Oh, he's bound to be interested in what I've got in this suitcase. Mm-hmm. Everyone is. They're bombs. You could blow the roof off the whole of this building with what I've got here. I've been carting them from room to room ever since the blinking war began. And often I think it wouldn't be a bad plan if they did go off sudden. Mm.
Who sent you to the Near East?
Chap called Digby Smith. Very interested in my bombs, he was.
Have you been to Pauling yet?
Pauling? Oh, yes. I was with him yesterday. Oh, very interested in my bombs. I tell you, everyone is. It was him said I ought to show them to Digby Smith.
I see. Well, that's the Near East office there. Don't knock. Just push open the door and say that you're from MI-13. Got that?
MI-13.
The one?
Yes. Thank you.
Mostly my job seems to consist of sending people who want to see me onto people they don't want to see. There was a man here this morning with a suitcase full of bombs.
Geoffrey, tell me, would you say I was pretty well known as a left-wing writer?
Of course, my dear fellow, very well known.
As a left-wing writer?
Of course, very left-wing.
Well known, I mean, outside the left-wing itself.
Yes, certainly. Why?
I was only wondering, what is to become of me? What am I doing here? How have I found myself where I am?
Where are you?
Adrift.
Adrift? A good title, that.
At Eton, it was a primrose path. At Oxford, a primrose highway. Paris, a primrose boulevard. My first book, The Negroes of Montparnasse.
Before its time.
Banned by the Home Secretary. What more could I ask for?
Might be worth thinking of republishing. Times have changed.
It was the American slump that changed it all. We were a beautiful, self-indulgent generation. And suddenly we were marooned.
Marooned? Adrift. Good titles for an autobiography.
Paul entered a monastery. David threw himself under a train. I went to Germany.
Ah, yes. The years in Germany. I wondered...
I reacted against it all, Geoffrey. Eton, Oxford, the years of privilege. It was a penance, I told myself. A penance for all those years of frivolity. I lived in workmen's quarters. I wore rough clothes, purged myself... And then I met Hans, simple, loving Hans. We were happy. Happy. And then...
Yeah?
A lot of my race throughout history, Geoffrey. To be forced to move on, the wandering Jew. Hitler's Germany forced me to move on. Somewhere in Central Europe, in a suitcase, there is a novel I never finished.
An unfinished novel? I wonder now, perhaps...
Behind barbed wire, I suspect, is Hans. Punished because of his friendship. No, his love for me.
Hello? Speaking? Oh, yes, Pauline.
I am the
Who? The Archimandrite Antonios. Fornications? Politics? I wonder if he'd like to write a book for us. Send him along, Pauline. Sounds interesting. You were saying?
I am not a political person at all. I am an artist. When you say that I am well known as a left-wing writer, do you suppose that if the fascists got into power here, I should be on their blacklist?
Yes, certainly, my dear fellow.
They did frightful things to the left-wing intellectuals in Spain.
Yes.
And in Poland now.
Yes.
And I would be on their blacklist.
Right at the top, I should say. You and Parsnip and Pimpernel.
Well, they're all right there in the United States.
Basil! Basil.
Ambrose, do you work here?
No, I don't. It is not a place I'd care to spend the rest of the war in.
How's Poppet?
Oh, she has cheered up wonderfully since you left. Hmm. Painting away like a mowing machine.
I must look her up sometime. I've been busy lately. Angela's back. Where should we go to?
I don't know. I have nowhere to go.
I've nowhere to go. I nearly joined the Bombardier Guards a week or two ago.
Oh, I once had a great friend who was a corporal in the Bombardiers.
We'd better go and see Sonia and Alistair.
Haven't seen them for years. He's miles away.
Have you any money?
Well, yeah. But I don't...
Well, we'll take a taxi then.
Alistair's gone off. Don't sit on that chair, Basil. It's full of forks.
What regiment?
I don't really know. He's in the ranks. They said he was too old for a commission.
Oh, my dear, how very 1914.
I'm just off to join him, hence all this packing. Ambrose, be a darling. Pass me that box, will you? It's got a cocktail shaker in it.
Yes. Is there anything to drink?
Oh, Pat, darling, sorry.
Where are you going, Sonia?
Or is it a secret?
Not as far as I know. Brookwood, wherever that is.
Ah. I want a drink now.
Well, we could go out somewhere. I've nearly finished.
No, let's go now. This is a time for decisions.
Very masterful.
Yours to command.
I'm joining Alistair at the weekend. Where's Rollo?
I'm not allowed to say, but it's by the sea, and on a clear day you can see the Isle of Wight. What are you doing, Ambrose?
Writing a book, I think.
Plus ça change. And Basil?
I've been talking to people in the Bombardiers and in the MOI, and I'm tied up with MI-13. Soon I shall be leaving London, I think. Can't say any more, Sylvia.
Oh, darling Basil, always the man of mystery.
Sylvia, come on. If we're going to have dinner, we better get a move on.
Oh, coming, darling. An American. His name's Papenhacker. Oh. What fun. Au revoir, mes enfants.
I think Sylvia is a little old for such jeune fille behaviour. Have you anything to do, Basil?
I have ideas. At the moment, no one's interested in them.
Beasts.
They've no imagination, of course. They won't take any suggestions from outsiders. You know, this war is developing into a kind of club enclosure on a race course. If you aren't wearing the right badge, they won't let you in.
I think that's rather what Alistair feels.
It's going to be a long war. Plenty of time. I shall wait until there's something amusing to do.
Alistair says he doesn't know what kind of war it's going to be.
Oh, that's all anyone talks about, it seems to me. Jobs and the kind of war it's going to be. War in the air, war of attrition, tank war of nerves, war of propaganda, war of defence in depth, war of movement, people's war, total war, indivisible war infinite, war incomprehensible, war of essence without accidents or attributes, metaphysical war in time, space, war eternal. All war is nonsense. I don't care about their war.
Margot tells me the last war was absolute hell.
I had it erected from Bonfrey.
Bertie's hoping to help control petrol in the Shetland Isles.
In the ranks. They said he was too old for a commission.
Algernon's off to Syria on the most secret kind of mission.
The one thing they've missed is the threat through Liberia.
Jimmy says that Bobo says that Goebbels is an absolute kitten.
Poor Johnny hasn't got anything yet.
Just tell them MI-13. It covers everything.
All war is nonsense, thought Ambrose. I don't care about their war. It's got nothing on me. But if, thought Ambrose, if I was one of these people if I were not a cosmopolitan Jewish pansy, if I were not all that the Nazis mean when they talk about degenerates, if I were not a single, sane individual, if I were part of a herd, one of these people, normal, and responsible for the welfare of my herd, God strike me pink, thought Ambrose. I wouldn't sit around discussing what kind of war it was going to be. I'd make it my kind of war. I'd set about stampeding and killing the other herd as fast and as hard as I could. Lord love a duck, thought Ambrose. There wouldn't be any animals nosing about for suitable jobs in my herd. So the leaves fell, and blackout grew earlier and earlier, and autumn became winter.
The part of Basil Seal was played by Simon Cadell, Ambrose Silk, Steve Hodson, Bentley, Hugh Dixon, Peter Pastmaster, Michael Cochran, Margot Metroland, Mary Wimbush, Alistair, Simon Treves, Sonia, Jane Whittenshaw, Lady Seal, Elizabeth Kelly, Sir Joseph Mannering, Jack May, Barbara, Jenny Howe, Freddie, Brian Miller, Angela Line, Marion Diamond, Poppet, Joanna Myers, with Timothy Bateson, Danielle Allen, Danny Schiller, David Bannerman, Fraser Carr, Nicholas Gilbrook, and Alan Thompson. The narrator was Tony Britton. The pianist was David King. Evelyn Waugh's Put Out More Flags was dramatized by Dennis Hawthorne and directed by Jane Morgan.